The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. We're delighted that with us this week is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat. Peoples-Stokes has served Buffalo's 141st Assembly District since 2003. Welcome back. Always wonderful to have you, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be back. Thank you so much for the invite.
Hey, so tell me about Buffalo. Buffalo has been prominently in the news this week. As part of, you know, this whole idea that Black lives matter, can you tell us a little bit what happened and what you observe?
Well, Buffalo is in the news this week, as is, I would say, most other municipalities, not just across the country, but across the world, because people have gotten to a point where they visibly see that racism exists, and it actually exists within our law enforcement as well. And so, you know, what's going on in Buffalo is no different than what happens in other places. I'm sure you know that, you know, the emergency response team, for whatever reason, decided to shove a 75-year-old man, which would be against New York state law, whether there was a protest in process or not, because you're not allowed to push anybody or hurt anybody that's a senior in our state without additional penalty. So, it's disheartening. Mr. Cugino had a right to protest, and the officers have a right not to like that he's protesting, but they don't have a right to push him.
Now, the President of the United States immediately tweets something that has really put Buffalo and this particular incident on the map. Tell us about that.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to comment on number 45 because I think most of what he says is irrelevant.
I got it. I'll comment on him, though, because I'm never afraid to do that. This business of saying that the 75-year-old man was a spy, basically, and was out to do him bad, really resounded against him quite remarkably. The president's numbers are, I know you don't want to talk about 45, but the president's numbers keep going down and down and down. And now in a poll, he's 14 points behind as we speak today. What do you make of that?
I think he's where he should be, and I think he'll probably go down lower. In honesty, I finally understand why he is president, because his actions are helping some of the many people who walked in those protests across the country and across the world understand that racism is real, because he demonstrates it on a regular basis right out of the presidential office.
How is this going to affect the New York State Legislature? Let's be honest about it. We have leaders of color in both houses. Do you think that this racist culture, which we keep hearing so much about, actually exists in the legislature itself?
Well, I think the fact that we have leaders of color and so many representatives, both in the Senate and the Assembly of color, that, you know, we have lived this life of racism in America. So it's has been difficult over the years to pass some of the legislation that is not new legislation, but we got it all done this week because there's been a mindset, not just among members of color, but quite honestly amongst members of non-color, who understand that some of these things need to happen, that nobody should be above the law. Law and order is necessary in a country that's founded, in my opinion, on violence. But law and order doesn't have the right to bring its immoral actions into this job that we pay for with public dollars. And so a lot of what we did this past week was to just say no and to make it illegal for them to do that.
Do you think that if the state Senate was still Republican, that you would have been able to get this thing done in the fast action time that we saw it done?
I do not. I do not. Even though if you go back and look at the records of the votes in the state assembly on some of these police community reform measures, you will note that a lot of Republicans did vote with us on these bills. But I don't think that a Republican-controlled Senate would have allowed them to get to the floor.
Well, I certainly understand that and believe it's true. So the governor has come up with a reform package. That's the reform package, I think, that was passed by the legislature. So does that come from the governor or does it come from you guys?
This legislation came from the legislators. Much of it has been introduced for several years. And so I think what the governor has done is concur with the legislation that we wanted to see happen.
Talk to me about 50A. What is that?
50A was a piece of legislation that was created in 1976 that in many ways I think was set up to prohibit defense attorneys from using officers' previous work record against them while they defended their clients. And I don't know that that was so necessary then, but I know that they did put it in place. But what it has morphed into is something that doesn't allow any information from a law enforcement officer to be foiled. And as you know, we're in a government where transparency is critical. Accountability is critical. And you can't get either of those out of law enforcement if their records in terms of their work performance is foiled. And so what we did in repealing it is saying that that's just not an option anymore. If there is a background, and there are a number of instances, instance in Brooklyn that was really clear that the officer was racist, but no one could ever get his record or access to his records because of 50A. They used 50A to protect themselves as opposed to using it for what I think it was originally intended to. So it needed to be repealed, and a lot of hats off to the sponsor in the assembly, Danny O'Donnell, because he's been carrying this bill for 5 to 6 years. As you know, I was formerly the chair of Government Operations Committee. The civil rights law comes under that committee. And more than once, the executive director from the Office of Open Government came to that committee and asked us to please repeal 50A. But we could never get the support in the Senate to do that. Now we have the support in the Senate to do it, and we've done it, and it's over.
The one thing that comes to mind is the power of the unions. I think politicians know how the wind is blowing, and the police unions have always been extraordinarily powerful lobbyists. Has that changed?
No, I think they are still extraordinarily powerful lobbyists. But when the world sees one of your officers literally put his knee on a man's neck and kills him in public in broad daylight, you can't keep protecting officers that do things that are not right. By and large, again, as a person who likes gun smoke, love law and order, we need law and order. Most of the officers comply with the duty that they swore to, but there are some that don't. And the union and no one else should be willing to protect them. And so the supporters that they had in the past that would support them because they asked them, don't do this to us, don't let this happen, this is unfair, they had to turn a blind eye to that because we know there's a very small number of these officers that will do that. Most of them are honorable men and women, and I can say that from a Buffalo perspective because I know a lot of them, and they are honorable men and women.
Tell me about body cameras. I've always been a huge fan of having policemen use body cameras. I know that the state police are now going to be required to have them and have them on all the time. They have an interesting way of turning off at the critical moments in the past. How important do you think this is?
I think it's important not just for the public. Quite honestly, it's important for the officers, too. Because just like there's, 5% of officers that are no good, there's a good 5% of American or New York citizens that will do things, nefarious things as well. So if an officer has on a body camera, he's actually protecting himself as much as he's protecting the citizen base.
You know, Majority Leader, we had this incident in Central Park, which has been much on my mind. A woman, a white woman, was asked to leash her dog, which was appropriate and it was asked respectfully. And she called the police, and the police came. And one of the things that the governor wants to do is to make it, and you want to do, and you passed, against the law to file a false police report when it's blatantly racist. Do you think that this is a major advance?
I do, because weaponizing your race in order to hurt someone else because you don't like what they said, you don't like what they did, or you don't even like who they are, is not a new thing in America. It's always happened. It happened in the case of Emmett Till. It happened in the case of Susan Brown, who pushed her children into the water in a car and said it was a black man. This is no different than what Ms. Cooper did in Central Park. That definitely needs to be illegal, and we have passed legislation to make that illegal because it's racist at its core. Because it suggests that if you call the police and say that a black man is responsible for something, they're going to be killed. And in the case of Emmett Till, they didn't call the police. This woman called her husband. And Emmett Till was killed. No one was killed, thankfully, in the Susan Brown issue with her children. But if there had been a rogue cop who was immoral on his job duty, the gentleman who just wanted to watch birds would have been dead. Because Ms. Cooper thought it was okay to say that he was threatening her. He was not threatening her. He was abiding by the law that she should have been abiding by. She knew what the rules were in Central Park about her dog. So things like that can no longer be tolerated. They just can't.
I hear you. Do you think it speaks well of change, on the concept of change, that she immediately fessed up and said she was wrong to do that?
No, she hasn't changed yet. Because America hasn't changed yet. And now, if she or anyone like her does that again and they get arrested, then they'll have second thoughts. Then her family will have second. I'm sure they all have second thoughts now. But let it go a little deeper. It has to go a little deeper. As a Christian person, I can accept her apology, but forgetting what she did, that won't happen.
Let me
because
ask you
people
this.
Are still able to do it in other places. They won't be able to do it in New York once the governor signs this legislation, not without recourse.
Now, you said you gave a speech on the floor of the Assembly, which a lot of people are talking about. And you and I have talked about this in the past, but I have to say it is incredibly important. I have a 6-year-old African-American grandchild, and the thought of what my beautiful grandchild faces in life, riding a bike down a street and two thugs come out with guns and say, you don't belong in our neighborhood, that kind of thing. So your talk was about, in large part, about your children and how you had to prepare them. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's like most people, you know, raise their children, you know, practice the golden rule, treat people like you want to be treated, go to school, learn as much as you can, be respectful to adults. But black women and black parents in general face a whole different level of psychology in dealing with their children when they send them out the door. One, you have to pray openly with them, internally within yourself. You have to pray that where they're going, they'll be able to come back safely. But in the meantime, there's this level of anxiety that you just don't know. You don't know who they're going to encounter. And because it's been so open and free that people can just kill black people, it brings a level of anxiety that's literally unfair to the black mothers who live in this country for decades that have to suffer through. But if you're going to raise a particularly a black boy, you are definitely going to have that mindset because you don't know where he's going to go, where someone will be just pissed by the fact that he's there, not that he's done anything or said anything or bothered anybody. And so that's a real feeling amongst a lot of people that I personally know and that I don't even know. I know it's a real feeling. It's a real feeling that my mother had. It's a real feeling that her mother had. It's a real feeling that my great-great-grandmother had. You know, I had people in my family who had to leave areas in the South, not because they had done anything wrong there, but because they had already been attacked by people for no reason, so they left to make sure they could stay alive, and they ended up in other parts of the country. I mean, this is historical in America, and quite honestly, it brings my heart a lot of joy. There's so many people of other ethnicities are understanding that this is a real psychosis that America has, and until we figure out how to fix it, we got to work through the laws to do that because we can't legislate morality. I wish we could. Well, we can't. But we can create laws that say you can't bring your immoral activity onto a job where you get paid with public dollars.
We are talking to New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes, a Democrat. Majority Leader, what about the calls to defend the police? I'm getting a lot of mail, you know, some of it says the old stuff of, okay, when you get into trouble, you call a hippie. And then there's a lot of people who want to defund the police. Joe Biden says, I don't want to defund them, I want to reform them. Governor Cuomo says the same thing. Where are you?
Well, I don't want to defund them either, because as I stated earlier on, we do live in a lawless country. It started out that way from a historical perspective. And every now and then, there will be both citizens as well as law enforcement who will do things that are illegal. And if we need their protection, we should be able to call them. At the same time, we're experiencing enormous negative impacts to our economy and our ability to pay for health care and our ability to pay for education. And so if there are some ways that there, say, 5% of the dollars that go to law enforcement could be used to put into education, to maybe even put law enforcement officers in schools to begin working with teenagers so they can have a better relationship, something that's just not criminalizing the department. And plus the other thing is, I think you mentioned this earlier, unions have a very strong hold. And no one is stronger on their membership than the police unions. I don't even think we can even still relate them to, say, SEIU or CSEA. It's a whole different type of union. And so I think in some ways, defunding that part of it could be important. But defunding police, no, I don't think we should do that. I do think we should have some collaboration, because I live in Buffalo. We have the Buffalo Police Department. NFTA has a police department. ECMC Hospital has a police department. Canisius College has officers. University of Buffalo has officers. Buff State has officers. Everybody has law enforcement. Do we need that much law enforcement? Maybe we could look at some ways to, you know, collaborate these forces, and so that we can save dollars that way. There's a number of things that could happen, but one thing is that I don't think we should totally defund the police department. I think we should look at collaborating the multiple law enforcement agencies we have within small regional areas in particular.
Let's talk about the state budget. I'm fortunate on this very program to talk to Governor Cuomo quite frequently. And one of the things he's looking at is he desperately wants help from the federal government. If he doesn't get it, and the budget is that far out of whack, as we know it will be, he's saying he might have to cut back school boards 20%. I take it you're hearing from some of those constituencies. And what are you saying, and what are they saying?
Well, New York has a big budget, and I agree with the governor. We really do need help from federal representatives. I have been in conversation with my U.S. senators as well as my congressional reps to say exactly that. It is going to be pandemonium if we don't get these resources from the federal government. At the same time, if we don't get them and there's an attempt to cut education by 20%, I think that's ill-advised. And I'll say, I mean, I can't tell you what I think should go in replace of not doing that yet, but I do think we need to, as legislators and quite frankly as the governor's office, need to start trying to figure that out. Children have been out of school since March, and they're not going to be back in school until September. We are not going to be able to educate them with less money. We're going to need to have more money. And so I quiver at the thought of 20% cut to education. That's going to be intolerable for me. Now, how we figure out how to not have that I'm not sure about yet, but I do think it bears some research. And, you know, I'll look into it, and I believe other members will as well.
How radical a place is Buffalo? I mean, here's the president. I know you don't want to talk about him, but he talked about this guy who got shoved, the 75-year-old man, shoved down onto the ground and really hurt, apparently still in the hospital. The president tweets, he was from Antifa. Is Buffalo a place that is radicalized?
I would say it's not radicalized more than any other place across the state of New York. I will say that just based on I know what I've seen some of his friends write about him, both on social media as well as in the Buffalo News, is that, you know, this is a guy who really believed in his right to protest. And quite honestly, that is his right to protest. I don't even know what Antifa is or why, you know, the president keeps raising that. I think he just wants to find somebody else to blame. But honestly, I don't think Buffalo is as radical as it would appear. But I do think that our police department is much like police departments across the country. They will protect their members who they know have done wrong. And that's why it was so important for us to do repeal Section 50A.
Majority Leader, have you been taking care of yourself? Are you staying safe?
I am. I am. I'm staying safe. I'm staying healthy. And I pray constantly. I'm in a mode of gratitude at this point because, as you mentioned earlier, you know, what we're going through now as a country, as a people, in many cases as a world, is multiple pandemics at the same time. COVID, the crash of our economy, which we're in a recession, and I think we're speeding towards a depression, unfortunately, as well as the most recent protest around the murder of Mr. Floyd in broad daylight. These are pandemics that this world has never seen before simultaneously, and it's very, very difficult to deal with. But when you get put in this place, this is what you have to do, deal with it. And I think that's what we've done at the state legislature. I think that's what the governor has been trying to do on a daily basis. And I trust that this too shall pass. And when it does, we'll all be in a better position because we had the right kind of conversations to move us forward as a collective in a manner that I want to think that the founding fathers anticipated for this country to be in, as opposed to the one it's in now.
So let me ask you this. What about the idea that we are reopening the state? You're taking care of yourself. I know I am. I don't like to go out of the house, to be honest with you, because it's so dangerous. I'm an older person. Do you think we're moving prematurely?
Well, I think based on the fact that so many people were out protesting, the vast majority of them did have on masks. Some of them did not. I think in a few weeks, the creator is going to tell us whether we're moving too prematurely or not, because either we're going to see a rise in the number of COVID cases or we won't. If we don't see a rise, then we should know that, you know, we've figured this out. We've got the social distancing down. We've got our hand washing down. We've got our masking issues down. We've got our hygiene issues together. We could be okay. But I will tell you that I'm not getting ready to go into a restaurant.
Me neither, or a movie.
I don't care whether they open them or not. Now, I will take a takeout, but I'm not going to go sit down next to anybody at another table. Okay, I'm not going to do it. And there are many places that are open that I'm not ready to go yet.
What about voting by mail? I mean, it seems so clear that it's the right thing to do. I'm hearing from people who say, ask the governor, how come I haven't got my ballot? I wanted one. I haven't got it. Can the kinks in this all be worked out in time for November?
Well, it looks like it's going to be very challenging. Here again is when you're dealing with an important issue like an election in the middle of multiple pandemics, you make some mixed steps. None of us are perfect. In fact, most of the perfect people are already gone. So we've got to work through this. People should be able to vote by mail. And it should be worked out that they get a ballot so that they can do so by the time early voting is available. Now, I'm not going to critique the Board of Elections because their job, like everybody else's, is under crisis. But they still got to get it right, and we still have to hold an election. And I'm hopeful that it'll be held in a way that will be fair and equitable to all candidates, regardless of what lines they're running on. And it will be fair and equal to all voters. Now, I do want you to keep this in mind. From a historical perspective, most senior black people, they don't want a ballot in the mail. They want to go vote at the machine, the same machine that their ancestors or their mothers before them couldn't go to vote at. And so for some people, it's comfortable to do by mail. For me, I'm looking forward to it. You are, but other people are not. They want to actually go to the voting booth and vote. And so I think both things have to work in tandem to make sure that it's a fair and equitable election.
Now, I know you don't want to talk about number 45. But it is so clear to me that this guy and the people with him want to repress African American voting in this country.
It's all they have. They don't have anything else. If they don't repress the vote like they did in 16 through social media and some email hoax, if they don't repress the African American vote, they will not win. The only way they win is by dividing. Most people, when you run an election, you win because you add. You add people, you add issues, you build momentum. They do completely the opposite. They're divisive. It's the only way they can win is to divide people. And that's what they're working on. I don't think they're going to be successful this time.
Well, as the old saying goes, from your lips to God's ear. Anyway.
Yes.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes. You're wonderful to come on with us again, Crystal, and we so appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you the next time. You're terrific. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome. Stay safe, healthy, and blessed.
You too.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.